If you are in Myanmar right now and you are an activist, if you go around the city, you have to be careful about your devices. In some of the military checkpoints, they have devices. Even if your phone is password protected or something, they can run the forensic analysis on your phone, and they retrieve all your data, and they can trace all your contacts. These are the examples, some of the examples of threats right now facing in Myanmar.
Welcome to a special episode series of Pretty Good Podcast, recorded live at the Digital Rights Asia Pacific Assembly in Chiang Mai, Thailand.
Engage Media is here with hundreds of change makers from a broad range of sectors who have come together to build knowledge, collaborations, and momentum on digital rights in the Asia Pacific.
In this series, we are featuring a number of GRAPAC 23 participants working across pressing digital rights issues.
I'm Sarah from Engage Media, and without further ado, here is our episode. I'm Sarah, and we are joined today by Bradley, a technology researcher who explores the impact of technology upon human civilizations. He works closely with the Chiang Mai University School of Public Policy and produces policy papers touching the subjects of crypto policy, digital authoritarianism, alternative communications, and other internet-related issues. He also performs as a behavioral digital security trainer and closely works with the community conducting training and research. Bradley is also finally part of the Myanmar Internet Project. Bradley, thank you so much for joining us at Pretty Good Podcast.
Thank you for having me.
Yes, so as a lot of your work is on research, could you tell us more about your research on alternative communications?
When we mean alternative communications, I mean about the communication methods, which doesn't go through the conventional methods of going through the spectrum using the big telecoms. Because right now in Myanmar, the telecoms are right now 100% occupied by the military or the military-affiliated companies. And also there are a lot of internet shutdowns. And that's why people living in the internet shutdown areas are using alternative ways of communicating with each other because they cannot access to the internet. That's why it is important to talk about these alternative communications, because when we talk about internet shutdowns, there are intentional shutdowns by the military. But on the other hand, there are also the infrastructures like cell phone towers are destroyed. According to Reuters, news agency, at the end of 2021, there are already about 400 cell phone towers were destroyed already. So it is, for average cost, one cell phone tower is worth about $170,000. So it is a lot of money to restore the infrastructure. On the other hand, the restoration of infrastructure become political, because the armed organization, they don't trust each other. So if you build a tower, I will shoot. And if I build a tower, you will shoot. And so that's the situation right now. That's why it would take time to restore the internet, the infrastructure. That's why in the meantime, the people in that areas are using a lot of alternative communications methods. Right now, they use range extenders to receive the signal from nearest available internet connection, and then they shoot the signal to their areas and use the internet access. So it is very difficult to get the signals. So right now, the alternative communication is needed, like such as satellite internet, the mesh networking technologies. They are very much in need right now. But in skill, there are none right now. So that's why it is important to talk about the alternative communications.
Yes, and Was alternative communication methods popular before the coup, or is it only something that the Myanmar people have had to learn now and learn quickly?
If we can get access to the regular internet, like 4G and 5G internet, we don't need to use alternative communications, because there are a lot of barriers in alternative communications, such as mesh networking devices and satellite internet. There are a lot of interference and also bandwidth limitation. So to answer your question, yes, this is the situation after the coup, because people cannot get any source of internet communication. They have to use, they have to rely on this kind of communications, like not 4G or 3G or 5G communication, but coming down to the radio networks, publicly available radio networks, and connecting from there.
Yes, and you've talked about a lot of the challenges already, not just with regular communications, but alternative communications.
Yes.
And so what do advocacy groups and activists need to overcome all these challenges? What kind of support can be given, not just locally within the Myanmar activist community, but also support that can be given by regional and international civil society and even other sectors?
There are some policy recommendations in my research, one of which is just to talk about the communication, because a lot of people don't know about it. And also the importance of that, because we still don't know when the infrastructure will be restored in a year or in 2 years, in 3 years, we still don't know. So in the meantime, we need that kind of communication. So we have such as Pretty Good Podcast, we're talking about it right now. So we need to talk about it more. Like, and also we need to talk about with different stakeholders, like technologists, civil society organizations, and digital rights activists, and also the internet companies. We need to talk about the alternative communications with various stakeholders. And another one is the most viable technology right now for the internet shutdown areas, internet inaccessible areas, is the satellite internet. But when it comes to satellite internet, the first thing we pop up in our mind is Starlink, Elon Musk's Starlink. So we try to advocate the Starlink company, but we have to be aware of that there are also other similar services that we can talk about. For example, Amazon has their project, which is called Kuiper. And another one is a OneWeb, which is developed by the European Union, EU. We need to approach not the only company, but all available companies, all possible satellite companies, with a group of various stakeholders. Because when we advocate about the satellite internet, we always talk about the revolution, and we always talk about the political situations, but from their side, they're a commercial company, you know? That's why we also need stakeholders such as economists, which can talk about the need of satellite internet from the point of economic views, and also the education sector leaders, because when we don't get the internet right now, the people inside the country, they have a very few sources of education to learn about when there is no internet. So we need to form a group of multi-stakeholder group of advocacy, and then we have to advocate not only one company, but also every possible satellite internet companies.
Yes, and thank you for sharing that. You listed a number of names, but you were saying, yes, they are commercial companies, and admittedly, they do not have the best track records, any of them, when it comes to data ethics and putting security first, because at the end of the day, it is commercial, and they also work with other big tech companies. So I'm not sure if it's in your research, but perhaps would you have policy recommendations on how to balance the need for them to be involved to support and to provide alternative communication, but also champion the needs of digital security for the Myanmar people and also privacy and safety.
Yes, that's also one of the key factors to talk about right now. But the priority right now in the situation of Myanmar is the accessibility. The privacy and security is important, but I think the priority here is the accessibility first, and then we can go to the security part.
Yes, and for those questions, there is a lot of support here at DREPAC 23, and also there are many digital security experts who I'm sure would be willing to also help. So if you yourself are listening and want to contribute more to this effort and to help the Burmese people protect their rights while also balancing the need for accessibility, then I invite you to reach out to us or to reach out to Bradley and other Myanmar civil society so we can keep this conversation going. And so Bradley, I do have one final question for you, and you can keep it brief. What exactly do you need from civil society, especially international? Like, what is the main request now that we have our audience listening to us?
Right now, the solutions to the alternative communication, not a silver bullet, you know. The things we need to talk about is the technology. Now, right now, there are limitations when it comes to satellite internet, when it comes to mesh networking devices. I've tested some mesh networking devices. The problem is power efficiency. The battery is working, but in the areas of Indonesia now, there are also no electricity. So they have to get electricity from the solar panels. So they cannot afford to preserve the energy just for the devices. So that's one thing. And another one is the bandwidth problem. Right now, the LoRa devices, mesh networking devices that we are testing right now, is very limited. Because you can only test 256 bytes of messages. That's about 3 sentences in English. If it is in Burmese, it is only about 1.5 sentences. So it is very limited. We are in need of technology which can improve the bandwidth, and also better if we can do voice messages or voice call over the mesh networking. So that kind of technology, if you are working for that kind of technology, you can. It will be very helpful for the Myanmar community to discuss about, and also about the satellite internet, which can be available inside Myanmar. So, for example, our neighbor countries such as Thailand, they have communication services that can provide to Myanmar's internet restricted areas. If you know satellite internet companies which can provide this kind of communication support, especially for the public living inside the better intensive area and the internet restricted area. So that will be very helpful.
So Bradley, you were talking about challenges and other threats to people using alternative communications. Can you tell us one specific example you encountered regarding digital threats on the ground, and how do you address that?
Yes. When it comes to digital threats, it doesn't depend on the people who are using the alternative communications, because right after the coup, the military government is imposing every possible digital repression and digital surveillance on every mode of communication. So there are a lot of digital threats, some of the digital threats comes from the state actors. Some of the digital threats comes from foreign actors. Right now, we are seeing a trend of distributing malwares, in the form of zip files or the fake invitation letters, and that kind of malwares. If you click it, or if you install it in your computer, it doesn't harm your computer. It will just stay quietly in your computer, and they mine all the data of yours, and then they send back to their servers. So that kind of malware is that we are facing right now. And another one is like, while we are using the phone calls and regular SMSs, there are a lot of interceptions. And I have talked to the victims, various victims of interception. Right now, the military is targeted on the activists, and they're doing the interceptions. And also another big threat is the targeted persecution of the online users. There, if you are in Myanmar right now and you are an activist, if you go around the city, you have to be careful about your devices, because there are military checkpoints. And when in some of the military checkpoints, they have devices, they use more forensic technology such as Cellebrite. So even if your phone is password protected or something, they can run the forensic analysis on your phone, and they retrieve all your data, and they can trace all your contacts. So these are the examples, some of the examples of threats right now facing in Myanmar.
And how are you able to combat against that? How are you able to protect your data in your experience?
There are various tactics that we can use, but one thing I can tell you is it's not 100% about the technology, not 100% about the behavior. So we have to like mix it up with behavioral digital security and the technology, the applications and that the technologies you are using. So and plus you need to know who your adversary is and what is your attack surface. So we need to balance on that kind of thing. So there are a lot of tactics, but in general, we need to balance these three things. One is to know about your attack service, and another one is what kind of behavior, digital security habits you are using, and then the technology.
Yes, and thank you for sharing that as well. Beyond people who are here in DREPAC 23, I do hope that our audience members who can help here will also reach out, as there it is an important situation, and we also need to support our fellow Burmese activists, and not just beyond the activists, but even the regular people whose right to communicate and to be able to talk to each other and to get information is very much compromised. So thank you, Bradley, for sharing your research. We will also be giving a link to his research, so if you want to know more. And so with that, thank you, Bradley.
Thank you very much, Engage Media and Critical Podcast. Thank you, Sarah.
And that is Pretty Good Podcast, live at the Digital Rights Asia Pacific Assembly. For more episodes of Pretty Good Podcast, please check out engagemedia.org/podcast. Again, that's engagemedia.org/podcast. For audio, we are available on the usual streaming platforms. And for video, we are available on cinemata.org. Thank you for tuning in.